Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Well, it seems a dramatic escalation of the roadmap to reopen Ireland is on the cards today, with the Cabinet on Friday today considering accelerating entire phases, and just came in there at 11:56. The Cabinet is understood now to have decided to ease far more restrictions than measures which had been outlined in phase two of the roadmap. One such measure or move is allowing people to travel anywhere inside their own county rather than just be limited to 20 kilometres from their home. And the ministers are continuing to meet at government buildings as we speak, with Taoiseach Leo Varadkar due to speak afterwards. So he'll probably go on the telly tonight at about 6 o'clock. Well-placed sources have said the National Public Health Emergency Team, NPHET, has asked if it should examine the entire phases to be brought forward and merged. And I think this is a lot of pressure, by the way, on the government at the moment to do something about this. The plan was never going to be the plan. And everybody said that at the time. It was a ridiculous plan. It was too long-winded. Even countries around the world, other countries' leaders were looking at our plan and slagging us off, basically saying we're taking too long. And we all said this from the start. Well, certainly I did. It's very easy to lock down a country, as we did in one day. Literally, we're locked down from tomorrow. The exit plan is always going to be more difficult, and something that they never really fully thought through. I mean, the very fact that you would suggest you would have an exit plan over a period of 3 months, when seriously we could see a rapid decline in this particular virus, and by their own admission, the virus was suppressed in the community last week, and the clusters that we're seeing at the moment and the cases that we're seeing at the moment, 20 and 30, whatever it is, cases a day, realistically are only happening in clusters either in meat factories or care homes. And they're the ones that really need to protect it, particularly the care homes where people were actually dying. The majority of people in the community were never really at risk, it seems, at all. 1,060 people died in care homes. The majority of people under the age of 65, thankfully in this country, got through this pretty much unscathed. So the question is, should we be opening everything? The opening of the larger retail stores is to be brought forward, and we'll see some of the big shops, like, for example, on Monday, Penny's has said, by the way, they're not in a position to open yet, but they do have permission. Some of the bigger stores like IKEA will probably open. Other measures signed off by NPHET include further measures to help children with special needs return to some educational needs this summer, with summer camp activities along with reopening of playgrounds. It is also signed off on changes to allow visitors into nursing homes in certain circumstances, but with strict guidelines on who will be permitted, while ensuring visitors observe appropriate hand hygiene, etc., etc. A number of other measures may also be accelerated, including lifting the travel limit altogether. The 20-kilometre limit, as I said, they're suggesting at the moment that it might be just lifted to the counties, but they could lift it altogether to encourage tourism in the country, locally to hotels. But today I want to ask you if you think easing the restrictions should be even accelerated further. Would you be comfortable with the idea of going back to normal, so to speak? Would you be comfortable with that? I want to know if we should ease those restrictions a lot quicker, like many other countries are doing around the world. Would you be comfortable with the idea of, say, if Leo Varadkar turned around and says, as in from Tuesday, we go back to normal, everything the way it was, back to work, off you go, back to school, off you go, flights, off you go on your holidays. Would you be comfortable with going back to normal? Should there be restrictions be lifted quicker? Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. Jerry, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Jerry?
Hey, Niall, thanks for having me on.
Good. Jerry, would you be comfortable with that?
I would be absolutely comfortable with going back to normal this summertime, with a caveat, of course.
What's the caveat, Jerry?
Well, you offer some rudimentary protection for the vulnerable. The data now shows for most people, there's no mortality, at all.
No.
So, and this original idea they had of opening up in the autumn or winter was actually a bad one, because that's when you get spikes of other non-COVID respiratory.
Yeah, well, influenza will be back with a bang, I imagine, October, yeah, probably.
And it will have to be presumed as COVID, and you have to self-isolate. So,
but that's going to get ridiculous, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because every time, I mean, look, us Irish are great for saying, I have a bit of a cold coming on, and we don't know whether it's the flu. Or we say we have the flu, and we actually don't. We just have a cold, right? So, exactly. I mean, you realistically can't be sending everyone home from work every time they have a sniffle.
You can't.
No, it's going to be nobody being work, for God's sake.
Yeah, and I think there's several strands of things going on here. I don't know if I've not read enough of the news, but I've not so much as heard even a slight apology from those in charge about some of the mistakes made.
They weren't mistakes. They were bad. There's a difference between a mistake and a bad decision.
Exactly. So I think there's so many people with a skin in the game, and we are sitting here under the table asking for morsels in the form of what distance you can go, you know, from your home. And it's getting a bit ridiculous. And I think the populace are not children. We are all...
Well, we're being treated like children.
Absolutely. We're being treated like children. So, yeah, I think in my mind, if I read this psychologically, I'm just thinking... They're saying, lads, let's not admit any mistakes here. Let's just make it...
I mean, what harm would it be to turn around and say, let's go back to the way we were, but with the caveat, and I agree with your caveat, we need to keep restrictions on care homes within reason. If family members need to go see somebody who's dying, obviously, or need to get to see somebody, absolutely, they should be allowed to, you know, and certain precautions taken with consent. In other words, if you have a person who's 72 years of age in a care home, and they want to be with their family for a day or an afternoon to have dinner, if they want to do it, I don't believe you should have the right to stop them. They are taking a risk, clearly.
Yeah.
But the risk is probably quite small at the moment, because I do want to point out that there's 25,000 people in care homes in this country. The majority of them didn't die. You know what I mean? So, I mean, even, you know, over the age of 80, if you get this, the majority of people still survive. So the point is that it would have to be with consent, and people that go back to work go back with consent. And if you don't want to go back, you don't want to go back. That's your choice. But stopping everybody else from doing it seems a bit bizarre at this stage.
Exactly. I mean, with the temperatures up like this, I think we are safe to do as Sweden. And maybe time, it might, instead of waiting for some kind of inquiry many months or many years later, it might be the right time for them to assemble a team to critically look at, you know, what lessons were learned, what mistakes were made, and ultimately what assumptions were wrong altogether.
Like our figures were drastically wrong. Drastically.
Absolutely.
Wrong. So even with the lockdown, I remember that famous speech that Leo made going back some 8 weeks ago now, or 9 weeks ago. We were predicting tens of thousands would die, even with the lockdown. That was based on this imperial figure from that university in the United Kingdom, where your man Ferguson, who made up this figure of 500,000 for the UK, and then was caught with his missus in the middle of the night having an affair, breaking the rules himself. So, and that they've already said those figures he used were actually there was errors used in the way they were calculated and the analytics used, and yet we still use those figures.
You see,
Jerry, you can answer this in a second. I have to go to a break because I'm way behind today, right? But I'll stay there on the line and I'll come back to you straight after the break, and you can answer that question as to why those figures you believe are so drastically wrong. Just to mention as well, Pascal O'Donoghue said the wage subsidy, not the COVID payment, but the wage subsidy scheme will be extended until the end of August. So if you're currently in employment and your boss is being subsidised to keep you in employment with the 80%, it is being kept until August. That's not the COVID payment, by the way, just to, in case you get confused. So anyway, getting back to Jerry. Jerry, how do you think they got the figures so drastically wrong?
Well, I think at the beginning it was okay to base it on the projections. But then in the face of real data, the problem came in where they refused to look at the real data and make changes in decisions.
Were they listening to the WHO too much instead of listening to other experts? We had two or three experts in this country. We've interviewed all of them at some point on the radio. They all sang from the same hymn sheet. Actually, you know, they almost seemed like the Grim Reaper at one stage. So they all sang from the same hymn sheet. But yet we had other experts on from around the world who said very different things to them. So do you believe that our government should have been reaching out, listening to other people rather than just the same people over and over again? It was a bit of an echo chamber, really, wasn't it?
There was an echo chamber. But also in the face of real data, one should be able to change their decisions and tailor their decisions to the data. I think there are so separate narratives taking place. I mean, you could wear a conspiracy hat and bring up a lot of issues. But it appears to me like everybody has been wanting to ride this COVID bandwagon, at least in its worst form, the WHO, the media, and our governments. And
the media have a huge role and a huge responsibility What I believe was something that we completely overreacted to. And I think when I say overreacted, absolutely we should have reacted and protect those who were actually vulnerable. But yeah. I think we overacted in general, which is going to cost more lives in the long term. And when there was an article this morning, Stephen Donnelly from Fianna Fáil said that 5,000 people could die from cancer in the next year. Undiagnosed cancers or cancers that weren't treated properly during this time. But I want to go to John as well, because John, you're on Classic Hits. John, would you be happy to see restrictions or the roadmap move forward, say, in the next 3 or 4 weeks, the whole bang, everything open again? Would you be happy to go back to normal? Obviously, but protecting those who need protecting in care homes, etc.
Hey, Noel. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a good sign that they're starting to move some of the restrictions and kind of, you know, supposed to speed things along a little bit. I think most people some people are breaking the restrictions, but other people who are sticking to them are probably getting a little bit tired of them.
I think people have become complacent at this stage.
Yeah,
and the complacency hasn't caused a huge problem.
No, I mean, the numbers now are under control, and I think even the health system, it always would come down to the health system being able to handle the amount of numbers that are coming.
The health system was never under pressure. Never, John. This whole idea that the health system were going to be out the door and we'd be putting people into Nightingale hospitals and should we paid whatever it was, 11.5 million per month for these private hospitals. And they were never used.
No,
the same in the UK. They built hospitals all over the place. Nightingale hospitals in Belfast and London and Manchester. They never used them.
True. No, I have a lot of relatives actually working in healthcare myself, and I'm in the pharma industry. And like that, I think they were very overly cautious at the very beginning, you know, to try and do a lot of this, maybe too much forefront and thinking that we'd have that. I think, to be fair, though, we did squash the curve down or flatten the curve, as they say, very quickly. But now's the time to start releasing people back out into the workforce.
Into the wild, maybe into the wild.
It probably is into the wild.
I'll ask you very quickly then, because I'm running out of time here. But in relation to, say, going forward, we all know social distancing can't work. Because it may work for individuals, you know, when you're out and about on the street or whatever it is, or talking to your friends. If you personally want to do that, that's fine. But it's not going to work in business.
No, definitely not. I mean, in our own company, and I won't mention the name, but, you know, 1 or 2 metres wouldn't work because we're close to each other anyway. But
it doesn't work in the supermarket.
No, it doesn't work.
You queue outside, but you rub shoulders inside.
Yeah.
No, I think it's going to be about adoption. You know, it's about maybe, you know, encouraging people to wear the mask, doing the hand washing.
Anyway. If people want to wear a mask, I believe the choice should be there. If somebody believes they're vulnerable, but I mean, they're equally vulnerable to getting influenza if they're that vulnerable. But realistically, as was said last week, not by me, by an expert, a 40-year-old woman, you know, walking around Tesco's with a mask on her is more likely to be killed in her car going to Tesco's in the first place. That's statistically. Do you know what I'm saying? So, realistically, you know, I understand why people might want to wear them, but I don't. Do you think they should be mandatory, John?
No, definitely not mandatory, because I don't think you should force on someone. But I think, you know, maybe encouraging people to wear them, you know, if they feel like that's going to be necessary. And the hand washing, I think, is going to be the key one. Like, until we actually do have a proper vaccine behind it, you know, that can help.
I agree. People should have been doing that. We should have been doing that all along. Since World War One and influenza came in, we should have been washing our hands constantly.
Yeah, you kind of have to wonder whether people weren't doing it in the first place.
There's definitely science behind washing your hands. And we have seen a huge drop in the common cold. Chickenpox, measles, and all those other communicable diseases, we've seen a massive drop over the last 3 months because people are being hygienic all of a sudden and we're not communicating with each other. But Jerry, just finally, in relation to what, to give you the final word on this, Jerry, I will be talking about it after the break as well, but I mean, do you believe, Jerry, that going forward social distancing can work in any shape or form?
I don't think so. It's just, I think even Leo Varadkar was answering a question in the door there about how, you know, the WHO recommended 1 meter, and he was trying to rationalize why he made it 2 meters by giving some arbitrary percentages about how if you're as close as 1 meter, you have a 70% chance of catching it, whereas at 2 meters, it's a 90% less. So I think they're all arbitrary. I've been around. I can see people are very, very comfortable. The collective consciousness knows that the the severity of this is not as much as envisaged.
Well, but we're human beings. We take risks every time we walk out the door, and one of those risks is catching viruses. Now, obviously, we could try and reduce those risks.
Yeah.
You know, and we've been doing that for God knows how long without many viruses around the world. Jerry, thank you. I've just run out of time there. Loads of texts coming in, by the way. Lots of updates there in relation to that, by the way. Can I mention, too, that the COVID payment... okay, for part-time workers, remember we were talking about this yesterday, they were going to kind of get rid of the COVID payment or reduce it. The first week in July for part-time workers, it will be around till the first week of July, okay? Part-time workers will get that COVID payment. Now, let me go to Mark as well. Mark, you're on Classic Kids. How you doing, Mark?
How you doing, Noel?
Getting back to these restrictions, now there's lots of news coming in, lots of stories, but I don't want to confirm anything, but it looks like you'll be able to travel within your own county. Although Joan did text in there a while ago, and she says, only being allowed to drive within your county is cruel to people who may live in places like Louth with family in Dublin. That's my situation. We're not moving forward with confidence at all, says Joan. In other words, very few restrictions. The shops, they're talking about shopping centres won't be allowed to open, of course, but some shops, maybe in retail outlets, will be able to open on Monday. Yeah. So they're bringing some of the stuff forward, but not very much, it seems.
I don't see the logic. Do you see the logic in saying to somebody, okay, now you can stay inside your own county? Like, what's the difference?
I think people are doing that anyway. At the moment, people are travelling more than 20 kilometres. I know
that. Absolutely, they are. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Some of the things to ask people to do, I will tell you, no, there are people out there that will stick by the rules, and that's a fact. And they have been doing it, like a lot of older people and vulnerable people have been sticking by the exactly what the government guidelines are, and that's very clever and that's very good for them, you know. But there are a lot of people that are travelling a lot further and going where they want to go, and I don't see the logic in saying to somebody that you can't.
The only thing I know you're going to have places like Wexford and people saying if we lift the restrictions and they can leave counties, you'll have half of Dublin going to Wexford for the weekend or going to Kerry or whatever it is. And they're saying, well, we haven't had any cases in God knows how long and we don't want them now with ye dubs coming down to us. And that's the kind of, I suppose, the mentality behind it and the reason why the government maybe are doing this. But realistically, by their own admission, there's no community risk at all by their own admission. So
exactly. But the fact is, Niall, if you were to say to the, if you're still, say, for example, the caravan sites to be, you know, mobile home sites to be kept closed, well, that would stop a lot of people travelling. A lot of hotels are still not open. So that's going to stop people travelling anyway. So they have no reason to go down to those places.
I'm very worried about people who are terrified. And I see it in society all the time. And let's be clear about it. The risk has always been low. And we know that from figures around the world, you know, the mortality rate is low. But the risk is even lower now because obviously, according to Tony Holohan, we've suppressed it in the community and we've flattened the curve or crushed the curve, so to speak. The curve never really went as high as we thought it was going to do. So the risk is low, but yet people, even though we've been told all along, I think fear has been put into people and people are afraid to actually go out.
Absolutely. Look, Tony Holohan doing a great job and all those people, but the reality is all he did every night was call out facts and figures of how many people died.
But it wasn't, it's quite grim, yes, I know, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, nobody else was doing that kind of stuff, telling us how many died and the medium age and the average age and all that kind of stuff. That's absolutely ridiculous.
I think that has to stop now because we're at a point where the figures are low, thankfully. And my condolences to those people who are still passing away. The 5 or 6 people per day who are still passing away. And there's 37 people are positive cases. Now, let's be clear. Out of those 37 positive cases, or 47 or 50, whatever it is each day, they're quite low numbers. They're all under 50. Realistically, most of those people, some of them will be asymptomatic, and most of those people are perfectly fine. They're just a bit of a cold. They won't be going to hospital. Some of them may end up, one or two may end up in the hospital. But it looks like we've certainly suppressed the virus. And by the way, the virus, according to many experts around the world, was going away anyway. I mean, it was probably going to dissipate like most viruses. It could, we don't know yet, but it could be seasonal. It could come back again.
The WHO got it completely wrong.
Of course they got it wrong.
They got it completely wrong because what they thought was this was, I don't know, maybe some guy in the WHO was watching a movie, Contagion, or something like that before this popped up. But the reality is, we have seasonal flu.
Now, we have to be fair, Mark, you know, a lot of people did die. But yes, the median age of those people who died was quite old, unfortunately.
Exactly, yeah.
So this particular virus sadly targeted a very vulnerable sector of society.
It would have. But if you had said to the people that were vulnerable and in certain situations, you need to stay at home, you need to look after yourself, you don't need to go out.
And we should have spent all the money in the world protecting those people too.
But why did we lock down a healthy population of the world because
Well, looking in hindsight now, that may not have been the wisest thing to do. And unfortunately,
right. And we stopped a lot of medical procedures for people who have serious conditions, and we've delayed treatment for a lot of people that have serious conditions.
Just like that lady we just had on there who didn't get her kidney transplant.
Exactly. And her and many other people like her around the world have stopped getting treatment for certain things because they couldn't do it. You have people's mental health are going to be it's going to be a major issue, okay? Because some people just can't deal with staying at home all the time. Some people can't deal with staying around their family. Whatever the issue is, you have major problems going to come down the line. You're going to have major problems in getting people back to work. Maybe the population that goes back to work won't be the same. We'll have mass unemployment, which could lead down.
We will have. There's no doubt about it. We'll have mass unemployment.
Right? Yeah. So we've done all this, and the reality is the amount of people that died. Was unfortunately there are a lot of people dying, and I'm not going to take it away from that because somebody.
So over 1,600 people died, and by the way, 1,060 of those were in nursing homes, and exactly. out of the remaining 450 or 500 people, the majority of those were people with underlying conditions and over the age of 65. So realistically,
my mother was in a nursing home, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
She wasn't affected by it, but other people were affected.
And should have protected those people. We should have known. We've seen what happened in Italy and Spain. We've seen the people that were dying. They were elderly people, and we should have known that. But the idea that we didn't know that was ridiculous.
I was on to you before, and I was telling you about my mother-in-law who went through an operation with COVID-19, and she's come out the other side. And she's doing fantastic, and now she's talking about moving in on to a care home, and she's doing remarkably well. The reality was, if we had to let this just run through the population, I firmly believe we could have told the vulnerable to stay at home, and some would have died and some would have lived. But the reality is, this thing would have mutated or would have done what it had to do, just like a pandemic that we have nearly every year with a season of flu, because every season of flu that comes around is slightly different to the one before.
There's different strains, yes. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. So what was the difference? The difference was people who would have had, I personally have asthma, people who would have been in a vulnerable situation could have been affected. Maybe they would have went through it, maybe it would have been a worst case scenario, but the reality is we should not have locked down a healthy population in the world for the reality of the amount of people.
I do agree with what you're saying. I understand the government. It was a knee-jerk reaction like every other country at the start because people were taking the advice of the WHO, and it seems the WHO got it very wrong when they were talking about a 5% mortality rate. So they got it wrong at the very start when the WHO said back in January that there was no human-to-human contact or it wasn't contagious human-to-human. Yeah. So they got it wrong. And by the way, the idea that, you know, America did something wrong when they asked the WHO to answer all these questions. It's outrageous that Simon Harris had a go at Donald Trump about that particular thing, because Trump was actually right to ask the questions.
This populist politics that's going around the world at the moment drives me mad, because the reality is we should be looking inside our own country before we target other countries.
It's almost becoming like a competition. Oh, they did better than us and we did worse than them, which is wrong because we're talking about people's lives here. You know, but exactly. In saying that, people keep going, oh, we should look at the state America's in. But should America have less deaths than we do?
Because nobody seems to be able to answer this question. Can I ask you a question? We know the figures of how many people were affected by COVID-19.
Per head of population, by the way, I meant to say. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, we know about that in every country and how many died. But can you tell me how many people died from just natural causes or other causes during the course of this 3 months?
Well, I was only looking at this yesterday, and we were talking about the United Kingdom here in the office and how badly they're doing. And the reason they're doing quite badly is because they've dense cities and they've a very old population. 18% of the population are over 65, whereas we've only 13% over 65. But in the UK, for example, for a bigger sample size, over 50,000 people die on average every single month in the UK. Of everything, you know, car accidents. And the majority of those people, by the way, are over the age of 65. In this country, we've 90 people a day die in Ireland. A third of those die of cancer. 4,000 people die every year of respiratory problems. So like COPD and emphysema and other things like that as well.
You know, previous to COVID-19, it would have said on the death cert, but probably people with respiratory problems, it probably would have said
pneumonia.
Pneumonia.
Yeah.
Right. So now we have COVID-19. So the people then, the families now, cannot even have a decent burial for their loved ones.
I know. It's very sad to think that anybody would go, without having their loved ones around them. And even worse still, not even just the burial, but could you imagine being, say, I don't know, the final stages of cancer before COVID even came along, and you were in hospital, you know, destined sadly to die, and your family aren't even allowed in to see it, to hold your hand.
They're looking through a window at you. And
that's ridiculous.
Why couldn't you give the families the choice as one family member making the choice that if I want to go in to see my parent or be with that parent
and take the risk.
Taking that risk.
Because it was of no risk to the person in the hospital. They were going to die sadly anyway.
If you look at Italy, and I went through these facts and figures myself. If you look at Italy, right, in the Lombardy region of Italy, 100,000 people die there every year. 100,000, that's only in one region alone.
I know.
So the reality is people die all the time. But now we just put a title on it. It's COVID-19.
In fairness now, Mark, COVID-19 did kill a lot of people earlier than they should have died. And many of those 1,060 people in care homes in this country, many of those people would have died this year or would have died naturally. But unfortunately, for many of them, COVID-19 took their lives a little bit sooner.
But now, can I just say this? Yeah, COVID-19, but if it had been
influenza could have taken their lives.
Influenza,
absolutely.
We wouldn't have done what we did to society today. We wouldn't have locked down the country. It just would have went through, and we would have had a proper funeral. And we wouldn't have closed society. It just would have ran on normally. That's my whole idea.
Oh, absolutely. And we have to be very conscious of the secondary deaths. Stephen Donnelly this morning from Fianna Fáil said that 5,000 people will die of cancer this year unnecessarily, who may have had cancer treatments or early diagnosis of cancer. In the UK, they're saying over 50,000 every 6 months extra will die secondary deaths, not of COVID-19, but not getting diagnosed for other diseases like cancers, heart disease, stroke, and all those other things as well. And we have to take all that into consideration. Then we have an underquantifiable amount of people who are going to die from poverty and despair and all those other things.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.